Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The main team.
QNL.
With guest co-host.
Disq.
Well, there's a mass assault outside my city state. Wearing my.
Not to be confused with the grammar assault.
Hi, this is episode 119, and today we are joined by our four regular co-hosts, including me, Philip Ballou.
Civilization crosses genres, platforms, usually not dressed, though.
Makalua.
Who will hopefully be joining us.
Caffeine and Jeff. Right, the beans.
Yes, I need that right now, thank you, yes.
And Dan Quick.
Streaming day and night, audio delight.
Our guest co-host, Keith Block, also known as Disq.
Is that rupturing your borders, or just having seen it?
I'm pretty happy to see you, but only when safe cross dress. Never mind. Hello, listeners.
No, I need more caffeine before I have to deal with Phil this morning.
Aww.
It's not morning, it's afternoon.
It's morning.
It's your time zone, maybe.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Well, it's morning. We don't have to discuss this. We feel like it's morning, it's morning.
Oh, I see.
I love how I've been given a free pass out of this discussion. Anyway.
What free pass? What do you mean?
I was trying to help you out here, and then go and open your mouth and try to
get across the board, but it doesn't mean you're immune.
It means I live in Canada.
I grant immunity to some things.
Coldness.
Oh,
that was a good one. It was like bird.
I'm also immune to arrogance.
Right.
We received an email, strangely enough, another one.
I apologize.
Is that one of those apply to all accidents? I know it happens sometimes.
Pretty much.
It's too late now, Keith. I had to open the email and read it and paste it.
Yeah, I'll just get the first couple chapters of fan fiction, but after that, there is one of this comes from Bam Bam. Says, more often than not, I struggle mightily in lifting my myriad fledgling civilizations to a furious, great, and criminal victory. Is that the only sitter on the Congo who likes to see returned to permanent alliances? It's usually the only way in which I can eke out a chance of ultimate success. In my humble opinion, the current diplomacy algorithm of CIS5 remains flaky at best, downright schizophrenic at worst. So, at any rate, I implore the devs to facilitate the return to permanent alliances in Civilization 5.
I don't mind it as an idea. Actually, I'm surprised that it's not allowed in the default game. Yeah, basically, Civ, in all the iterations of Civ, victory conditions are a zero-sum game. There's only one winner, with the exception of when you have teams or permanent alliances. And the ability to form one with a Civ would be, well, it would be a good change-up at least, because certainly if those existed, you'd want to do it as a game, because it would be advantageous to do so. But you could actually have diplomacy lead to both sides being winning, if you could trust each other for long enough. So there's definitely some incentive there in diplomacy that would be sensible that doesn't exist right now.
It's kind of a weird situation in Civ 5. You've got all these Civs who are not trusting each other from the get-go. So it makes it much harder to approach even Gandhi, more likely to see Nixon, you know.
Well, yeah, but then you can nuke the world together, see? So diplomacy has meaning all of a sudden if you can get a permanent alliance going. That is, if the conditions required to get a permanent alliance with an AI were reasonable, not too easy or hard.
Right.
It would also make co-op multiplayer a bit more interesting, I guess.
Yeah.
Better than nothing like this.
Yeah, it would make much more sense as a preset multiplayer mechanic. You need to set in the settings, go rank the game, have permanent alliances with your other player. So it would make for a much more fun game that way.
I don't know if I agree with you two. I don't really love the idea of having permanent alliances in Civ 5. I feel like it's kind of, it wasn't a great mechanic in Civ 4. Okay, it was good if you were, like, really behind and you were, like, way above level and somebody else is, like, you know, can help you out. But I don't really, I mean, the way that the AI handles the policy already, I can't see it really handling criminal alliances with, well within the diplomatic framework that we have now. And, I mean, I just don't, I mean, I think some of the aspects of Civ 5 can be conducive to criminal alliances, for example, the whole, like, science thing. But, I don't know. I don't really think it's a priority in my mind.
Oh, I don't know. You can very easily transition from repeated declarations of friendship straight into a permanent alliance, especially if you have consistent trades going on or similar military targets. Certainly, well, you could probably make it an easier transition than Civ 4 did. But also, you don't have to make it implement as if it were Civ 4. Certainly, that's not a requirement. Probably the biggest problem with Civ 4 permanent alliances was AI doing, you know, kind of stupid things. And that would still be there in Civ 5. But you could, even with the AI doing some stupid things, if you were to permanent alliance in Civ 4, you would still improve your tech rate dramatically unless you were just running away with the game. So if you were playing on, like, level appropriate where you had at least some doubt of losing it or winning at the start of the game, permanent alliances could help on a pretty consistent basis, assuming you could find a viable target for it and do it. And, but it wasn't such a guarantee that you would always do it. That was actually somewhat reasonably balanced, and I think Civ 5 could do that. Now, granted, the diplomatic system in Civ 5 in general needs an overhaul for sure, and permanent alliances would not fix that, but I don't think they would hurt it.
I could see a situation where you have shared puppet base between two civs and getting benefits for both of them. I mean, I don't know where you go from there, but...
I'll just, in terms of permanent alliance consideration, talking a lot here, I think, about the human player and the artificial intelligence. Now, in multiplayer, obviously, not so much necessarily competitive multiplayer, although I suppose if there are a couple of really large sys and you want to go gang up on everybody else, go for it. But
you could not allow it in competitive multiplayer. It would be a complete joke if you did. Complete joke. Friendly multiplayer, co-op multiplayer, absolutely. Competitive multiplayer, no frickin' way. Just waste the game.
I'd love to see America share a unique ability with Babylon in that case. Well, and it worked pretty well for scenario creation. For something like, say, the French-Indian War, you'd have the two sides being able to share those kind of benefits with each other right from the get-go. It would allow for some better communication. And maybe even use a single AI for two sims at the same time.
Yeah, I'm not sure how you'd approach that from a coding standpoint. Certainly, historically, the AIs just acted independently, but shared research and war status. That's probably not the best thing, but I would be hesitant to have it unify the AI. I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, you do bring up a good point about permanent alliances and Civ 4. But the possibility of AIs doing permanent alliances with each other is a little bit worrisome. Of course, it would have to be, present at a later time, just as it wasn't before. I believe it was available with communism. So some sort of late tech would be a time that's good for the initiation of permanent alliances.
Yeah, communism or fascism.
Yeah.
Change. You never play Polynesia in a permanent alliance game ever again.
You wouldn't necessarily have to pin it to the same text. I think anything like industrial or later would probably be serviceable. It just depends, though. All I ask is that if such a thing is put in the game, that it's balanced. But that's something I always ask and get, well, sometimes.
That's kind of a struggle right now, as it is.
Getting so what do you want? That's what it is.
Making a balanced game that isn't dependent heavily on luck is what I want, but... Jeez, it's hard to find that these days.
You can't always get what you want. Sorry.
Yes, he has authorized singing. Thank you.
Sam Hammered from singing.
I did not. I just set the rules for it. All like one second,
just in general.
That's right. I will use my mod powers against you. Aw, man, you're in the moderators now.
Yeah, it could be forever.
Forever, you know.
We're all being hammered. Oh, I think Mackie wants to take the show solo. Uh-oh.
No.
I mean, to say the least, just have a long running monologue. Like, you know, let's play Polycast. Caveat that, but it would be awesome.
So thank you, Bam Bam, for your email. And I'll conclude this topic. Did you know that permanent alliances are also known as alliances that are permanent? In the news, Civilization World Gameplay Walkthrough, Episode 1. Sound effect and affectation added by me. So there was a video posted to the 2K channel from Pete Murray, the marketing associate at Firaxis Games, this developer, to give us a little bit of run-through of Civilization World, or Civ World, or I guess the acronym will be CW, which some amateur radio operators might not be too happy with. But anyway, here is, from the Civ World walkthrough, Pete Murray.
First of all, Civ World is a persistent game that allows players to play whenever they like and work towards both individual and team goals with each visit. Each game has a beginning and an end. The goal is to end the game as the player with the most fame points. You earn fame points for achieving great things in the game, like leading a battle, unlocking new technologies, or building a wonder of the world. Each game will end with a winning player and a winning civilization. Civ World is a collaborative game where you'll join with other players on Facebook to form a nation and battle competing civilizations in your game to become rulers of the world. This collaboration brings players deeper into the game where they'll strategize with other players to achieve a victory. It's a totally new gaming experience for Facebook and a whole new way to play Civ. You can join together with friends to create a nation. Each nation has a single king along with princes, dukes, and nobles. You can be promoted to king and win one of these medals by accomplishing something special within the game. It's actually not too difficult to work your way to the top, but if you want to become king, you have to work pretty hard to keep your position. After all, everyone wants to be king. But even if everyone wants to be the king, you still will want your nation to do well, so you'll want to collaborate with your fellow citizens to make your nation the most powerful. The game is divided into eras. Here you can see the victory conditions a nation has to achieve in order to win this era's victory. And after the last era victory, the game ends. Right now, it looks like we have a shot to achieve a cultural victory, so I'll send a quick message to the rest of the nation asking if we can work toward that. Civ World is a persistent game. During the day, you can stop in for a few minutes and collect your harvests, make a few more moves in the game, and see if any new dangers have arisen for your nation, and then go right back to work. Or you can stay and collect some of these bubbles and scoop up a few more key points if you're right on the edge of a milestone. Much of the depth and fun in the game comes from collaborating with your friends to win a victory. This level of collaboration is something new and exciting in social networking games, and we're looking forward to opening the game to the Facebook community soon.
All right. So, again, there was Pete Murray from Firaxis, and I know that one of us here has done a little bit of playing in the game in the last 24 hours, but maybe even before that person. I think that, Keith, you had a reply in the thread, or at least one.
Oh, yeah, I guess. I was sorry about what was going on once the game started. I was kind of intrigued by how Sid Meier's essentially subverted the mechanics of Facebook into something that's exploitable. I mean, Facebook was kind of a game anyway, now it actually is a game.
Well, I mean, you know, there were other really popular Facebook games before, you know, and I'm sure you've definitely heard of them, Farmville, Cityville, etc. I've tried to play this Civ World. I think I made it to about 400 BC before it kind of crashed on me. Or I wouldn't say crashed, but basically there was a dialogue screen that came up and I couldn't close it for the life of me. So that's beautiful. But it was a lot of fun before that happened.
Well, were you just playing as like independently, or did you join another civilization? Because I know it talks about that there's the strength in that, that the idea is that your city, which is your Civ, I guess your city, one Civ, joins others so that you can then work together with other people. So did you get into the social aspect of it? And that?
No, I mean, I know that there's like a dialogue, there's a screen at the bottom that has a little chat that you can talk to people in, and, you know, thereby you can make alliances with them. Maybe not permanent alliances, but, you know, alliances or like join up with a team or something. But I didn't do that because that was my first time. Playing Civ World, and, you know, I was just like, okay, let's just learn how to do it, and, well, I don't know, I mean, it seemed fun, but, once again, bad thing happened, but, I mean, I still gotta say, I mean, it is in closed beta, so, you know, who knows what they're gonna do to it, and, I'm just gonna go back to it once it doesn't crash on me.
In case people are wondering, is Lisa breaking a non-disclosure agreement? She is not. There is no NDA when it comes to Civ World, so those involved in the beta can speak and type to their heart's content.
So were you able to see any specialization of the players, maybe things like science, culture, or you know, kind of free to do whatever kind of city you want?
Yeah, no way. I didn't really see any other people's. I didn't have the time to see other people's work. I was just looking at, I built like maybe my first two houses, and then I was like, okay. And I was like trying to, yeah, I mean, like I said, I was trying to get out of that dialogue, and it didn't happen, so I was like, okay, I'll just leave and maybe come back later. But it seemed like a fun game. I mean, fast paced, because it took about 10 minutes to finish, you know, all those turns to get to 400 BC. And, well, that's my brief and leading experience with Civworld so far, since, you know, last night.
Was there a particular type of victory condition that you were going for, or a particular type of slant? Like, were you focusing on technology, culture?
No, not really. I mean, I was just even figuring out how it worked. You know, like, I don't think I was making gold or production or anything. I was just kind of making food, and I was like, okay, how does this, like, growing thing work? Am I growing? How do I make production? Oh, I think I bought 20 horsemen, so I'll just, you know, take them somewhere, but then it crashed. So the cool thing was, like, you could make production, and you would have the hammers, I guess, on the side, and you can just use them at any point to get whatever you want. So, like, you have a bunch of hammers, and you decide to buy 20 horsemen, you can do that. So that was pretty cool.
Axe rush.
I just wish I could have done something with them. I didn't really see any resources in there, but maybe that's just because I didn't look hard enough. And, yeah, I didn't see the copper or anything. I did see that you could build Axemen, but I don't know if that was because I was lacking some resource or because I didn't have the technology, because I didn't progress in tech at all. I didn't figure that out yet.
I expect that since you're limited to one Civ, you're probably not going to have to say, oh, I'm sorry, you don't have horse, for example, so of course you can't build your horse. I mean, that's just an inference on my part.
Yeah, it seems like the case for me, too.
But what of course you were saying is that in learning the game, you were just going for a time victory.
Ha, 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 ha.
I tease. I haven't actually heard that there actually is a time victory in this game. I was looking through, actually, there's some information on Facebook from Fraxis and 2K. Isn't that interesting that they have the information about the game on Facebook as a Facebook game? Who would have thought it? But anyway, several articles have appeared in the last few weeks, and last few weeks, great day. Last week or so, math is never my strong suit. One thing it talks about is that you'll be able to move and recycle buildings. So don't be afraid to experiment as you build your capital. I don't know, does that mean that like buildings take up a tile or a hex or something or whatever the term is, as opposed to being like in the city itself?
Yeah, well, it kind of appears like it does in Civ 4, where you can build a house or a farm on a certain tile. So they each take up one tile. But essentially at the center you have your city and you have the structure surrounding it. But as far as I remember, the tile improvements weren't really different from normal tile improvements. You had your, you know, house, which was basically like a, you know, like a cottage in Civ 4. And you had farms, but of different types, so you could get, like, vegetables, or you could get corn, or some other things. And I don't remember what else there were. Oh, there was a difference between grassland and other types of land, yeah.
So is there an actual whole map you can look at?
I read that there is no map, there is no gameplay map. Yes, the elimination of the global map in Civ World results in some significant changes to the game's warfare mechanics, as noted on video on G4 TV.
So does this mean that you're going to join Facebook to play this game?
How did we jump from elimination of the world map to my playing this game? I'm curious.
I don't know. I seem pretty negative about this game, and you seem to be the, you know, most positive one so far. So I was just wondering, you know, you seem kind of...
Well, maybe that's because I haven't played it, and that's why I'm being positive. I don't know.
I haven't played it either, but I already have some concerns just based on what I'm hearing.
Well, it looks like you can get mines, and you can move them to production, but they just look like a pile of rocks. And no, there is no map. I don't see any map anywhere. But there are, like, leaderboards. Just boards of people who are currently playing, and they're in, like, some league or something.
But they're not, like, my actual Facebook friends, because I expect none of them are actually on this game yet.
Okay.
More of a social map in that case.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you can definitely chat with whoever seems to be playing at the time, and that's called global chat. But you can also do private chats with other people in the game. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I see these civilizations that are going on, but you can't see them anywhere on a map. They're just kind of existing somewhere in the ether. Yeah. Good.
So what I'm curious to see in Civ World, and I don't think that they've announced this yet. I'm a little surprised the YouTube video is so badly received, that you link. But anyway, yeah, I want to know, like, how much of an extent you have quantity versus quality of the players for a given Civ within a game is going to make a difference in the play, essentially. Like, even if you play really well, if you get, like, 30 scrubs, are you just going to get overrun and destroyed, or... Yeah, how is that going to work? And also, like, how do you choose your allies? How do you recruit people? Things like that. Because having played lots of online multiplayer where you're forced onto teams, you can have that make or break you. And I remember hearing something about having, like, 200 people on a Civ. And I've never known 200 people who've played in a single game at the same time. So to what extent are you depending on your teammates and, you know, how are they splitting up leaderboards, if they have leaderboards, and just, you know, how much of an impact does your own individual play have on the outcome of a Civ World game is something that I'm really curious about, as well as the mechanics, like what are the trade-offs in the game, but we'll have to get into that once we've actually played it.
So you should just get on the closed beta then.
Well, I could try.
I mean, goodness knows you're a part of the communities.
Actually, the invitation to the closed beta has actually passed now.
What?
Yeah, it's closed.
Oh, well, I'm glad I got it then.
So apparently that's not an option for me just yet, but we'll see.
Other information, I think of all the information that I was actually reading on the Facebook articles, my favorite came when it talked about great people. There are five varieties. You've got the artists, prophets, scientists, generals, and builders. And great builders, so other than a great engineer, in other words, a great builder in Civilization Revolution as well. Each wonder requires a combination of great people to build. Now, that statement implies to me that you can't maybe necessarily build wonders of the world unless you have these great people. I don't know that to be certain, but that's one inference. But this was my favorite line. Once a wonder is built, another civilization can steal it. I went, oh. It says, however, to rebuild the wonder in their civilization, that civ will have to put additional great people into building the wonder. Like, for example, you need a great scientist and a great builder to build the Library of Alexandria for the first time. But to build the Library of Alexandria the second time, it could require two great scientists and a great builder. And I'm just thinking, is there like a limit to how many times you can have it, you know, like stolen from you? I can just see this people investing so much time into taking the wonders back and forth. Not necessarily a bad thing. I just find the whole thought kind of humorous.
I was going to say, is this coming San Diego now?
yes, where in the world is your wonder now?
Right.
Oh my.
He can grief people by taking their cities and burning their wonders. That would be great. Just like a real Civ game.
Oh, you use the phrase a real Civ game. Whoa, look out.
This may or may not be. I'm holding judgment. I'm not going to say anything necessarily one way or the other until I've played it.
Well, you know, I haven't played other Facebook games, but all in all, this is fun. But it goes by kind of fast, yeah.
I know that people were having trouble looking at the game even when they come back to log in. You're just giving us the next game.
Yeah, yeah.
What we need to do is, like, a polycast team, just start up a clan where we just take over a Civ with all of us and play better than the other people and just dominate on Facebook.
Well, I mean, become a legend before we can do something like that.
Or get those.
First, Civilization World, then the rest of Facebook, then
the... It's coming from someone who doesn't even use Facebook. We're going to take over Facebook. Blow up the ocean.
Most of the activity on Civ World is synchronous, so, you know, happening in the quote-unquote real time. So in addition to being, you know, a Facebook game, a more social game, this really is, I mean, it's like a real-time strategy game, although I guess we'll have to see. I don't actually want to use the term strategy. we'll see. It's a tactical, real-time tactical game, maybe. We'll see.
That's good.
There are a couple of these quest-type things. That's not the name that they use, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a little, yeah, the mini-game kind of things. Yeah, exactly. I guess just some other brief things to mention here, relatively speaking. We talked about combat being a little different because of the lack of the global map. There's an hours-long period during which players marshal their forces once war has been declared. The number and types of units that can be brought into each battle is dictated by geography, which changes from battle to battle. There is a throne room in this game, like Civilization Revolution and like we last saw in Civilization 2 on the PC. Yeah, that sounds right. Of course, the $10 thing comes up again with regards to the microtransactions that we really looked at last episode or two, where you can purchase a number of customization objects for your throne room or spend them on specific temporary gameplay advantages, says a preview on G4 TV.
That's an instant fail. If money equals win, it's over. They can't do it. Don't do it.
I hope that's not true. I've never heard any place else even allude to, and actually they went out of their way to say that that wouldn't be in there. But then the next sentence is, an effort to maintain a level playing field and prevent players from simply buying a victory. There is a cap on the number of stiff bucks that can be spent on influencing the game. But if you have specific temporary gameplay advantages. Do you know what a temporary advantage is in Civ, for example? A golden age. But that doesn't necessarily mean that once the golden age is passed, the advantage is gone. So I'm a little wary of that statement.
Yeah, I don't know that much about what Civ bucks do, but apparently, 20 of them are $2, and 40 of them are $3.75, U.S. dollars, that is. And
I assumed, yes, okay.
And, the prices go down as you buy more Civ bucks. So if you get 320, it's $21. So, yeah, that's pretty much like a new game, huh? Only it's a Facebook game? Why do I have to pay for it? Okay.
Well, you don't have to, but they're certainly giving you incentives to actually fork out real dollars for Civ bucks.
Yeah, and they accept all forms of payment. I feel like a commercial for Civ World. No, but seriously, $21 on Civ bucks? I mean, maybe 320 Civ bucks will last you a really long time. Or maybe it won't. Maybe it'll be, enough to, buy a few, golden ages or temporary advantages to, as they call it, temporary advantages to, win, but...
Inflation.
Gonna spend, $21 a month?
Modern armor will only last you a few turns. But for $20, you can probably conquer the world.
So... I don't know how to find this out, though, because I don't want to, pay them Civ bucks, pay them real money to get virtual Civ bucks. I don't know what they do yet, so we'll see what happens. Maybe I'll take a look at somebody else who's built some crap with them. I think everybody's just going to go buy that Civ and say, sucker.
Back to just combat here. Armies clash once every few minutes until one side has been reduced to zero. So the battle can play out automatically if you're not able to be there when the timer counts down. But if you can be, I guess from that sound of things, you can micromanage the battle as it's being played out. So that, the armies clash once every few minutes until a side is reduced to zero. So I guess it's possible the actual battle could take some time to play out in real time, depending upon the numbers.
Wake up at 3 a.m. and attack. Let's go for countering the naval sneak attack. A blast from the past of Civ 4, so to speak. A lot of us still play it, so I play both. This is by Wolf Blue from a couple months back, on March 27th. And he says, your navy spots a large flotilla of ships heading towards your shores. Ships belong to an opponent which is annoyed with you and has made several demands which you ignored. You're pretty certain that the ships are an invasion. Force heading toward one of your cities, but it's possible they're attacking someone else and you don't know for sure, and you don't want to declare on them because it would have other negative consequences. How can you defend yourself? this is one of the flaws in Civ. When you know somebody's going to attack you, but the attack initiative is actually powerful enough to make a difference in the war, then you are in trouble, especially if that Civ has signed a defensive pact or, you know, is part of something where you declaring on them has a material difference compared to them declaring on you. And defensive pacts would probably be the best example of this. There's really not a lot you can do other than either suck it up and declare on them or let them land on your shores and then take them out there. Now, in multiplayer, this is less of an issue, and it's very important you kill those ships at sea. So you need to really scout to see it coming. But what he's saying here isn't the problem of scouting, which is key in naval battles, but rather how are you going to stop them from entering your borders. Unfortunately, culture only goes out two tiles, so you know any ship from the astronomy era on can reach your shore very easily from there. You have no choice but to preempt them unless the landmass is really shaped oddly, or you won't have a lot of coastal cities or whatever. So I guess either just have a strong land force as well as sea force, or just declare on them. That's really all you can do, I'm afraid.
And to some extent, there's been sort of fixed in Civ 5, the denunciation mechanic. Although I'm not sure if that would help too much.
It doesn't, because what happens is if you declare war on somebody for any reason, it adds a demerit of, well, it's kind of under the hood, but it adds to your warmonger, a crude warmonger rating under the hood there. And that's a problem, because if you know they're going to attack you, you still can't really intercept them at sea without letting them declare on you first. Unless you want to take that demerit. Now, Civ 5 is a little bit more forgiving in that it's harder for the AI, at least, to insta-give you, but players still can. A good naval force can allow someone to take one of your cities on the turn they declare very easily. It's mitigated to some extent only because of the one unit per tile and all that shebang. It's no longer the point where you can just insta-get a city captured and have it burned, you know, within seconds of it being captured. But it's still a problem, and it's certainly still there. But no, it's not as bad as being forked and then being declared on and having your city raised before you can even react.
In Paradox Games, is a mechanic where you have to have a reason to go to war in the first place. So, I don't know, if that was introduced to Civilization, maybe that could help someone.
Reasons for war and Civ would be pretty gamey. It's an interesting idea, but oh man, it's such a break from what's going on currently in every Civ game. Because usually your reason is either I want more land or I want some diplo favors. It's one or the other for the most part for going to war in Civilization, at least for human players. And AI that are playing rationally will do it for the same reasons.
And likely can throw out a reason for going to war and do something completely different in the process.
Yeah, well. And why else would you go to war, really?
Exactly.
Your economy has really crashed, and it would be nice to do some kind of damage, even if it's pillaging, so you get some of your units killed, and, oh, look, my economy's improved. I know this is a desperate measure example, but it's the first one that came to mind when you asked the question.
I guess, but ultimately you're just correcting the quote-unquote mistake of preparing for war in the first place. I guess you can use it just for pillaging as opposed to capturing land.
Well, I was just wondering, like, whether it's happened to you in Civ 5 or Civ 4, but I was wondering more about Civ 5.
The AI has always strictly been terrible about it, and that goes for both games. So, I haven't played a lot of competitive Civ 5 multiplayer because it doesn't work. In Civ 4, I've been on the wrong end of it. But in Civ 4 multiplayer, people understand. You won't have somebody across the world be like, oh, you declared on my friend who had a big stack outside your borders, so now you're a jerk and we're going to declare on you just because you declared war on him. No, that's not how it works in multiplayer. The third party is only going to care if one side gets an advantage big enough that threatens them. So, there's no real issue with preemptively declaring in competitive multiplayer and just sinking the Navy. You know, even defensive pacts only carry so much meaning in this case. And in that case, it's more of an aggression pact, a bit of an understanding between the two people who sign it. It's really not an issue, I guess what I'm getting at, because human beings at least have the capability of being rational, or at least considering what's best for them and not getting dragged into idiot wars. So if you get dogpiled, you get dogpiled, but it's not because you declared first. It's probably because they were planning on teaming up on you to begin with. I don't know. The AI is so bad at it that this only becomes an issue in games where you're behind, or you know, the AI bonuses are huge. The AI will never, in Civ 4, and I haven't seen it do it well. Sporking is a little bit of a lost concept in Civ 5, so on the Invertile. But I've never seen the AI fork a human with Naval in Civ 4 and selectively raid cities that are less defended. That just doesn't happen. It will land a big stack. It will, if the city's like totally undefended or only defended by a warrior, it'll capture the city and sit on it. And if you have at least a little bit of defenses, it's going to land the stack next to one of your cities, then bombard it down, and then take it. But if you're in the age of rail or even engineering roads, that's really easy to counter. So it's not a big deal, but if you do want to intercept them at sea, you are going to have to declare first.
Yeah, when we're talking about the AI and Civ 4 and the naval sneak attack, I'm going to assume here that Wolf Blue is probably talking about at Beyond the Sword, because before that it was, I don't think it's even good now with Beyond the Sword, but it was a marked improvement over Vanilla Civ 4. And I think in Civilization 5, where we're talking with the AI, it needs a similar treatment. I actually find it worse in Civ 5 as far as the AI trying to do anything naval-wise. I played a number of water maps, and not just as Polynesia, but anyway, where the AI had military superiority. Now, when I say military superiority, this is land-based military superiority, and that superiority is completely flushed down the toilet when they decide that after they declare, not only are they considerably farther away from my territory, like I find that they're not even right necessarily at my borders, but they do not have naval ships to escort those units, which of course now, you know, your land units can just go right onto the water a la Rise of Nations. And if you have just even a few units, the facts combined with the one unit per turn, meaning, you know, they gotta spread themselves out in terms of where the units are, and if you've got, you know, some decent bombard technology with your naval units, it's just gone. It's just an absolute farce. So, in competitive or even cooperative Civ 5 multiplayer, I haven't played that in a while just because of the technical difficulties, but when it comes to Civ 5, I think Imagine put it in here at the chat, if you can see it coming from miles away, yes, it's... Unless you're completely out to lunch and not monitoring things, I'd say it's absolutely not an issue in Civilization V. Even though I only play as high as Monarch typically, occasionally as Emperor, it doesn't really seem to make a difference. It does not know how to do naval combat, let alone a sneak attack. I was able to turn the tides. Like they invaded with the units, and I destroyed them on the sea, and then the units that I had, I was able to go in, and I was able to take some of their cities. They weren't quite as ridiculous as the Civ 4 AI, but we're doing fine on our own. It was definitely a mistake on their part, and they did not adapt, even when they realized their first tactic of, let's just put our land-based units in the ocean with absolutely no escort whatsoever, and quite visible to my troops. That didn't work the first time. Let's try it again, and again, and again, because if we repeat the same thing, we will get a different result. City-state versus research agreements from Otis McKenzie. I usually choose to invest in healthy city-state relationships versus research agreements, and I was wondering what direction other people go. I mostly choose city-states over research agreements because all too often the tech that I get from the research agreement is something that I don't want or need at the time, or I'm already researching it, making the research agreement a waste of gold in a sense. So, like I say, I was wondering what other people's strategy is. I think a good general answer actually comes from Imagine in the thread, which is it's somewhat of a both answer since it will depend on the game and what is available, and are you at war constantly. I would say based on recent experience, of course, we're talking about human and AI research agreements here. I would say overall, generally speaking, it depends who you have contact with. But I would say research agreements are generally speaking a stronger way to go, if only for any other reason than even on quick speed, for example, I found myself being able to get into later game eras a lot more quickly than I was able to find myself doing in Civilization IV, and that could just be, you know, Dan not making use of diplomacy very well. But the research agreements I found, you know, nothing like being able to get into, you know, the modern era in, you know, 12 or 1300 AD.
It really depends on what you're researching to, just so you don't end up with archery after 20 turns, but crap would wait.
Yeah, but experienced players now can just basically decide which text the RA gives them. And with that in place, it becomes extremely difficult for the cost right now of RAs for anything to compete well with them. Certainly, if you have enough money for both, you would probably do both. But it's I just don't see city-states on a typical basis, unless you get lucky with, like, great scientist pops or something, outdoing research agreements. And there's no other alternative to a research agreement that has anywhere near the returns on gold investment that a research agreement has. Those things are just ridiculous, and they are comparable to tech trades in Civ 4 in that department. The amount of multiplier you get for that versus any other option is just insane.
It being situational, I still do like, certainly at the start of the game, if I can find a cultural city-state, one that's friendly or irrational, not a hostile one that influences the grades too quickly, that culture benefit can be a particular benefit. And I would often say, no city-state, especially culture towards the social policy, or no, go towards the maritime one for the increase in food, which is all well and good. But particularly, maybe it's because of the nature of, I don't even know, the one unit per tile, that technological edge, that even with the AI, even when I'm in research agreement with multiple AIs, and I see them doing research agreements more and more, like you get notifications of research agreements, I've seen that more and more in successive patches since the game has been released, that even if I'm doing that and they're doing that, I end up being farther ahead in the technology tree than they are. And I think a really good advantage, something to do with our research agreements, is they often don't have, a lot of them often don't have, the gold. And often I find, oh, sure, you're particularly friendly towards me, and you don't have the gold, whereas somebody else might demand even like a 50 or 100 gold on top of the gold that you're investing in it. Even in that situation, I find it to be worthwhile. Even when I think, research agreements, I think I've seen them maxed out at, 234 gold? I don't know if that's, 234 gold, and you start off at, 120, 130 or something like that. It's definitely worth it in the long run, but there could be short-term advantages for city-states. Really, I'll invest more heavily in city-states if, for whatever reason, I can't get a research agreement out of the Civ. Because either I can't front them the money, or in order to then get it back in the same turn, or for whatever reason, maybe other things have been going on in the game that they're not interested, or you don't even have a lot of contact with a lot of civs, formal civs, but you have more contact with the city-states. But my gosh, as soon as you're able to find a civ, unless you think you're going to be taking them out or going to war with them, you know, within the 25 turns that it takes for the research agreement, get philosophy if they don't have already, and get those going.
I just think RAs are a little too obvious to pursue in most cases. You could go for Scholasticism and it's like almost as good, but you'd have to be in war like almost always. It's ridiculous.
Here is the button to push to win.
You need to play well in other aspects of the game to win on high levels. But the problem is that this particular aspect of decision making and gameplay is so bland because it's so consistently your strong option that you really have to even consider it. Think about what you're doing or compare the trade-offs of a research agreement versus something else. The vast majority of the time, it's just research agreement, assuming you can make any, you do it. And it's not very dynamic. And it was the same thing with tech trades in Civ 4. I'm not saying that Civ 5 is anything groundbreaking in this regard. Tech trades were probably worse. We were talking about that in chat as well, because their ROI is even higher. But I don't know, it just seems like a mechanic that takes away from a lot of the rest of the game because it's so overpowering compared to the decisions you would make in the Empire management otherwise.
Yeah, you'd have to be a little cautious. I mean, if you're thinking about a research agreement with a civ that you see is under siege from a particularly larger civilization, you kind of have to measure, is it reasonable to conclude that they're still going to be around in 25 turns? Or even entering a research agreement with a particularly strong civ that may not be that favorable towards you. I've seen them initiate war anyway, even though it cancels the research agreement. And then you think, ah, crap. But I think, by and large, that's definitely not a reason that I would then say, oh, forget about research agreements or don't prioritize them as much. I found myself, particularly towards the higher levels here, that my being able to stay in the game, and I don't necessarily mean a domination victory, but to at least present a reasonable ability to be able to defend myself very much correlates to your technological level when you can't quite have as many units. And for a great part because of the one unit per tile and the whole how much the game really does seem still emphasizes gold versus hammers, that you want the quality units, and that quality units is generally, if not obviously, come from the ability to progress through the technology tree.
Maybe the way to counter that would be to introduce other cooperative agreements that would maybe almost as powerful as research agreements, or nerf the research agreements down a little bit and add some more projects in the meantime, like say Cooperative Wonders or doing United Nations together, possibly even doing something like similar to City State, only a more powerful level.
I guess let me put it this way. Let's say you are building buildings in the correct order compared to somebody else. You know, maybe a library is a higher return for you in one city versus a granary, or maybe building a military unit out of one city is more efficient than the other because you have a barracks, whatever. You're making all these little decisions about empire management from the game start to finish, and they give you an advantage. Or, you know, maybe you try to improve X tile before Y tile, and you're improving your outputs, and it has a snowball effect. My problem with tech trees, my problem with research agreements, my problem with mechanics that are so much stronger than other mechanics is that just one difference in a research agreement can completely wipe out any variance in play in, you know, all the other aspects of the game. And because of how long it takes to meet civs and do things like that, you can actually get research agreements ahead or behind, or tech trades ahead or behind in civ 5 or 4, as you will. Just based on spawn locations or who happens to have money that game, it's not only is it a strong mechanic, but it's too dependent on, like, just situations that are outside your control. I would really like to see Civ be more about empire management than this kind of stuff where, you know, you're just milking the diplomatic situation the best you can. Pledging to protect the city-state. I've not seen anything in mechanics that make it beneficial, so I'm actually interested in this thread. Like, I wonder what the actual value in pledging to protect the city-state versus just being allied with it really is.
I'd say it's more of a holdover from launch with the Pact of Secrecy and Cooperation. It's kind of something that, okay, I'm going out with Veronica, but we're not going to do anything about it.
That's nice.
You know, it's a choice you can make in the game to click that that pledge button. You have to be friends with them at least, right, in order to do that, friends or allies?
Right.
Okay. You know what I say, for every choice in life, there's a consequence? Well, what is the consequence in this game? I mean, really. I mean, if you pledge to protect, the consequence that I found is that, especially getting this con for some reason, I like to pick on city states. And I'll pledge to protect one. And then he'll attack it, and then he'll contact me and say, hey, I'm attacking one of your friends, you know, what are you going to do about it? So I'm actually given the choice. Like, I pledged to protect, but now I've been prompted, okay, are you actually going to follow through on that? You know, it's kind of like entering into the defensive agreement. Okay, the person who entered in the defensive agreement has been attacked, so are you going to live up to your expectations or what? I know there's a Diplo hit, but it seems to be that the Diplo hit is, I've never seen or felt that because I pledged to protect, I've been put in a more negative position.
There's probably something it's doing underneath that we don't know about that makes him less likely to take those deals in the future, but it's the effect is, well, at least visibly when you're playing, it's almost negligible.
Let's see, we just looking in here in the chat, Magic coming in, that the AI really hates you if you attack one of their protected city-states, and yeah, I mean, as far as humans, I don't know. It's not kind of an awful thing to say. Oh, that city-state of mine has been declared on. Is it going to fall? Yes, it is. Oh, well, I guess if I really want another city-state of that type, I'll just find another one, or I can live without it.
I suppose it would be more useful if you had some sort of, you had to have a reason to declare war, and that would give you a reason to do it, if you had a system like that, like they have in the Europa Universalis games. But you have to have a reason. I mean, you can go to war without a reason, but it's better if you have a reason, because you get less unrest that way.
I'd like for that to be the case, certainly. If you're given an excuse to declare war on an AI because it attacked a city-state you've pledged, that would be very useful. I haven't seen evidence that that's what's going on, but maybe.
Yeah, because you can certainly get the converse, right? Even if a city-state isn't allied with anybody, if you attack enough city-states, then the city-states gang up on you. Where's the converse of that?
Really? I'm a defender. Why don't you all join me?
I know that the Imagine Order of the AI gets really upset. They do, but then when it comes to, I've seen that too, but I haven't actually seen them, other than be like, grr, arr, you attacked one of our city-states. So it's like, what is it, if you were able to call them in a dialogue and say, so what are you going to do about it? Meh. I actually don't see them often protecting, like putting their money where their annoyance is, or their units where their annoyance is. Look at it from this perspective. If you're looking at attacking a city-state, yeah, find out who they're allied with, and if you think they're a particular threat to you, you perceive it. They're near me, their military is stronger, it's larger, higher tech, whatever it happens to be. Then maybe I need to think twice about it.
It's Alexander with companion cavalry.
But as far as pledging yourself, even when I see a notification in game that, oh, so-and-so has pledged to protect, either because it just happened or often I find that, you know, when you first discover a city-state, it'll tell you, it'll be like,
not for my protection, don't mess with it.
Yeah, exactly. And I just think, whoop-de-doo. Or when I click on the button, I mean, they seem appreciative, but that's the other thing. Like, what advantage do you get from the city-state itself? They say, yes, I pledge to protect. They say nice words. Well, they type nice words, that doesn't say anything. I don't hear voices. But I don't know, but it's like, okay. So you're going to give me some more culture then, because I pledge to protect it. If you're a culture city-state, you can give me some more food because you're maritime? What? No? Cheap bastard. Actually, a little bit back to Civworld in a sense. Just there's an article on blog.games.com about an upcoming game. Let's talk about Facebook games from Zynga. I didn't pronounce that properly, right, Zynga? Well, the almost the company is valued at almost $1 billion. They might have something to say about it.
that's totally $1 billion of real money. They have it in a vault and they swim in it every day.
Just like Scrooge the Duck.
I was thinking just like in DuckTales.
DuckTales.
Mackie and I are on the same wavelength again. I guess there was an advertisement in one of their games where there was a Cityville billboard inside Farmville before Cityville came out, and now there's a new one that's being advertised. It's called Empires and Allies. You'd be able to build an empire, at least if we're going to believe the ad, which, and then Brady Sherlock Games.com says, if we just to believe this could either be another take on the city-building genre, or it could go so far as to be their version of a real-time strategy game, created in an effort to beat 2K and Firaxis to the punch with their release of Civilization World. And there was an ad that Dale on WePlayCiv was able to font. Well, he found that someone found in the code on one of the Farmville servers a Shockwave ad that I'm going to put this in the chat, has the following Latin phrase. I'm not going to try to read it, but it translates according to Google Translate, which of course you know is 100% perfect. But get the general gist.
It's good translating Canadian into English.
Well, at least you can translate that. I mean, American English, forget about it. But it's translated to "Hello World is here to cancel meals." Okay, it was translated. Okay, so forget about eating. I like the translation of the next sentence.
Something is the law, and something about the law. That last sentence.
According to Google Translate, the last sentence is, that is, beating a lion in the annoyance.
Reminds me of Civ 4 animals.
Well, if you look at it in Latin, it looks like it's saying the lion in the lion. I know that's not really what that means, but too similar to English.
Okay, so it'll be interesting to see what exactly Empires and Allies comes out to be. There isn't any other information about the game right now, but I kind of like the threat title that Dale of Ecclesia gave this, which was Reynolds versus Meyer, the Master's Apprentice.
Well, I don't know if anything's really changed too much already. He already rides the nation, so it's not such a big change as that, so.
Yeah, exactly. It's been lineage, both, you know, before Zynga had big, huge games with Rise of Nations, and before that when he himself was at Firaxis, so.
Right.
Competition should be good for Civilization World, or for any title, for really anything for that matter. Not gonna just rest on your laurels, or something else.
On today, in North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at The Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Podcast and Roughcast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
I'm not a big Facebook game player to begin with, so.
I'm not much of a Facebook user to begin with, let alone a Facebook game player.
Yeah, it's stuck in the 90s.
And look, just because I don't get on the latest trend and bandwagon does not mean that I am stuck in the 90s.
It's not a trend, it's just.
How old can you sound? Oh, it's a trend. Oh, my God, I'm not going to get on this internet thing. It's going to be a trend.
Wait a minute. Facebook is a particular application online. Okay, maybe trend was a poor choice of words, but, you know, there was a time where MySpace was considered quite spectacular to know that. You know, and GeoCities 2 before that, and,
I remember something about GeoCities when I was a kid or something. I remember hearing about that.
Smart among us realized that MySpace sucks, so.
I don't know, I'm not saying that Facebook will go the way of a MySpace or a GeoCities.
Be sure to follow Dan on Twitter.
I'm not saying it well, I'm cautious here. I'm just saying, look, it's nothing against Facebook personally, it's nothing against Facebook games. I will say that the fact that there is going to be a Civilization being part of Facebook, the number of games that you can play on Facebook, does have me intrigued. I will say that I'm not so quick to dismiss Facebook now that we are looking at a Civ game on there, just like I was quite quick to dismiss console gaming before Civilization Revolution came about and got me to reevaluate, oh yes, well maybe it's not for you entirely, Dan, but it's not, you know, just for noobs or people who don't want to play. Like, if you get into this, oh, play the real quote-unquote Civ, I think even, and I see comments about that with regards to Civ World 2. It's kind of like, you know, I don't necessarily agree with, you know, the interest in Civ World to a great extent, like it's not for me, but at the same time, I'll defend people who say that, no, this is of interest to me, and people should give it a try before they pass judgment. I'm not trying to pass judgment on it. I'm actually enjoying reading the information about the game, even if I never play it. Please insert 25 Civ bucks to continue this conversation. I'm kidding.
conference call, Diplo the Merit, AI declares. Oh, wait, that was a Civ 2 strategy. My bad.
This has been Podcast, episode 119, with the main team.
I sneak a lot more than just attacks.
And quick.
I pledge to protect my enlightened self-interest.
It's a bang.
Hi.
And Echo Lua.
I can't snap nappy. Thanks, bye.
Not morning there anymore, I'll think.
Okay, so I'm having a siesta. What's your problem? No morning here. It's going to be morning somewhere all day.
That's true. It's always morning somewhere.
It's a day.
Boy, I was going to say something, but I said it when I was on mute, so not on mute anymore. Bye.
Bloopers.
You got a blooper, girl.
Record date May 28, 2011. Civilization 4, 5, and World Soundfest copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.